reconvene, and during the break, I talked briefly with Judge Jasper, and he said he thought he had answers to the some of the questions that were asked earlier. And I said I'd ask him if he would briefly respond to those things, and he said he would. And so we welcome back Judge Jasper, and proceed.
Thanks. I'm Jonathan Jasper from Anoka County. I'll be the only You'll be the only body who ever thought I was brief about anything. I was just listening to some of the questions. I have some answers. I have some information from the Minnesota State Retirement System that's good for the 6 months ending June 30th, 2018. In that 6 months, there were 27 retirements. 10 were at mandatory age. 14 were between age 65 and 69, and 3 were between the age of 60 and 64. So that was the information they had as of that time. The average age of a judge getting hired during that same period of time was 48.6 years old, and 56% of the appointees are female. And that was the information we had from the MSRS that I thought was useful to you. Someone had asked about the retirement program. Because judges retire or usually start their job much later, we do have a higher multiplier. We put in more money into our pensions, and we cap out at 24 years. So after 24 years, your pension is quits accruing in any way. The question about being in your district, it has been talked about a lot down here and at the Judicial Council, but the Constitution says you must be a resident of the judicial district at the time of appointment. So there has been a lot of talk about changing that, but it would have to be a constitutional amendment to change that. Trying to think of what else that you'd asked. Anyway, those were the ones that jumped out at me, and I was going to share with you if there's other stuff that you wanted me to answer or follow up, I'd be happy to.
Mr. Asp.
Yeah, thank you. That's really helpful. One other question I'd asked about was whether there is a difference in the number of applicants between Greater Minnesota judicial districts and metro judicial districts. Do you happen to know anything about that?
I don't have any kind of a study on that or any of the actual numbers, but I will tell you from my experience that we have a much harder time recruiting outstate and in the smaller districts than in the metro area. And part of that, I think, can be explained by, you know, there's about 60 judges in Hennepin County, something like that. I'm not sure. If there's an opening, you've got 100,000 lawyers in Hennepin County. I don't, you know, the number is huge. So then when you get the next opening, the same people are applying. So you get a bigger pool. May not be a more diverse pool or a different, but you get a bigger pool where if you're out in Pine County and there's 30 lawyers in the county and there's an opening, you know, you can get a much smaller pool. And that's where they really spend a lot of their time trying to recruit people in to get people that are qualified. She was talking about, you know, learning family law or being trained. One day you're a lawyer, the next day you're an expert on everything. And if you're a criminal defense lawyer, you have to make family law decisions the next day. You know, if you're a civil lawyer, so you need people who are smart, well-educated, and driven. I'm not aware of any judge that's working part-time.
Any other questions for Judge Jasper? If not, thank you very much for doing that. That helps move the ball forward quite a bit.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Olson?
If I may, I have a couple of pieces of information to follow up on questions I believe, Jim, you asked earlier. One was on the criteria, the eligibility criteria for running for various constitutional offices. You have to be 21 and eligible to vote. I just glanced at the Constitution. And except for governor and lieutenant governor, have to be 25. And the Office of Administrative Hearings has about 20 workers' comp judges and about 15 administrative law judges, although there might be some contract people in those offices.
Mr. Chairman, did you happen to know anything for unemployment law judges? Did you find data on that?
No, but they're not administrative judges in the same way as those who are at the Office of Administrative Hearings.
Okay.
So they're not in the same salary range.
Thank you.
Yeah.
What we did last time. Okay, that completes the testimony we have put together for this. And again, with a tight time frame, I think we should start talking about our recommendations and see what things we can come up with and see where we go. And I don't, we have the, basically, let's talk about, we have the constitutional officers and the judicial salaries that are, I think, will be the most difficult. The rest is a range, and I think there's enough flexibility in the salaries now. They're not at the top of the range that we can probably do what we did last time, and that'll be, I think, a little more straightforward. But I suspect that our opinions about the judicial salaries and or the constitutional officers. And one other thing I'll throw out is the kind of the format of the report. In your folders, I believe, are copies of the report from last time around, which I thought worked pretty well and was certainly very comfortable with it in terms of the format. I thought that we could generally plan to use that again. I think it speeds things up, and that has generally been the format over many years, so I think that that would make sense. So how do you wish to proceed? I'll just leave it open and let council members talk a little bit, and let's see some thoughts. Mr. Fox.
I apologize. I have to leave. It's not because I don't want to be part of the conversation. I have a conflict. But just as an overview from what we did last time, just a couple of observations. I think just with regard to the governor's salary and probably some of the other constitutional officers, I noticed that the other states have increased their salaries rather significantly over the past 2 years. So we have, if we tried to make it up in the last recommendations, we have lost ground because nothing was done. We've lost ground significantly more than we were when we started this council 2 years ago. So that's one of the things that I observed. In order to get back to the ranking where we were, at least with regard to those officers, we'd need to make at least what we recommended at that time in 2017 to stay at that same level that we had proposed last time. So I just put that out as some initial observations that I've had. So with that, I'm sorry, I have to leave. I'll try and phone in and see if I can find some of
that. Well, thank you. That was helpful, and I appreciate that. Other any general comments?
I just have a question, James Robbins. You said we aren't at the top of the range. I'm not sure I understand. Maybe I misunderstood, but you said there's less stress on the fact that we aren't at the top of the range. I don't understand that.
I may not have explained that very well, but Mr. Hubinger here can explain it quite well. We'll ask him to do so, and then see if that clarifies it, and we'll just, let's keep focusing on that till we all get so we understand it in the same base.
So, Mr. Chair and Mr. Robbins and members, we're talking about the agency head salary ranges. The council makes recommendations on the ranges, not on the salaries. There's a spreadsheet that we provided last time that has a list of all of the commissioners and their current salaries. The important part for the council is three quarters of the way down where we list the current ranges, groups 1, 2, and 3, and show the history there. An important factor is that several years ago, the legislature indexed those ranges so that they're adjusted by inflation. So even though the legislature hasn't artificially adjusted them, they have to set new limits. They are increasing over time. And currently, for example, the maximum of the salary range for the large agencies is $180,310. The current maximum current pay of a commissioner in a large agency is $154,000. So there's about $30,000 of room for the governor to propose salary increases without having to change the range. Minnesota Management Budget, the personnel agency for the state, indicated to the council that they don't see a need for the council or the legislature to change the ranges from the current structure that we have now.
Mr. Robbins.
I realize this would be another extraordinary recommendation, but I do personally feel that the grouping ranges are significantly inappropriate. And I will say that because you look at folks like the Human Rights Commissioner, who has 49 people. It's a very specialized department. It does not in any way relate in terms of salary range to the challenges that are presented for several of the Group 1 agencies, in particular transportation and human services. So I do believe we should, and it's in our purview, to look at making a recommendation to adjust this. And I also, if you could help me, Mr. Hubinger, we aren't involved with MnIT or MnIT. I don't even know what you call it. But this is a commissioner's office that's not filled, and there's a good reason for it. There's no one who would take the salary who's competent to do that work, frankly. So I think we need to look at some recommendations in those areas. So I think we do want
what
to
would that that would be in the other recommendation
in the other
category of what we did last yes. time?
Mr. Chair and members, part in, part out, the council has within its jurisdiction to make recommendations about the assignment of positions to ranges. So your first, the first item you raised about the commission, the salary for the Commissioner of Human Rights, if that should be in a different range than Commissioner of Human Services or Transportation, is within the jurisdiction. For some reasons that I'm not totally clear about, the Commissioner of Minute, as you say, is a challenging one to appoint, is not currently in the list of agency heads that this council has jurisdiction for. And so as the chair has indicated, the council could make a recommendation about that, but it'd have to be in the sort of the non-statutory set of recommendations that would be made.
Yeah, I okay. realize, and we've done this, you know, we talked about it at some length, and there was some testimony in the first meeting. This is James Robbins. I think we have the latitude. No one has told us we can't make other recommendations, and these are clearly related to our statutory purview.
Mr. Chairman.
So,
Mr. Wensler.
Member Robbins, do I understand that when you're looking at the spreadsheet, you're saying it's for the salary of 2015 for $150,000? Is that where you're thinking that it's, for lack of a better term, grossly underpaid? Is that the salary you're looking at?
I'm stating just a fact about whether they can attract a competent manager, because they haven't been able to, is my understanding. And if you look at the comparatives with other major cities and counties and what their IT situation is and what has happened at this state level, mm-hmm. it's unacceptable.
I'll rephrase.
It just is unacceptable.
I'll rephrase. Mr. Hubinger, Mr. Chairman, this is Vice Chair Wensler. Am I looking at the right spot on the
yes.
spreadsheet you've given me? It says Office of Minnesota IT. The last range I see, or the last salary I see paid for that position on January 5th, 2015 was $150,000. Does that look correct that I'm referring to the proper wage that is currently for that commissioner or that position?
Yes, Mr. Wensler, that's the last salary we have. It's okay. possible that the incumbent that served received increases, so it'd be somewhat more than that, but it'd be unlikely to be more than 155 or 158.
Okay.
That's in a compensation plan. I think the maximum of the range for that position in that compensation plan is around 180,000.
Okay.
Okay. And then, Mr. Chairman, for Mr. Hubinger, one follow-up. When it says groups, it's got one and two and then three, for lack of a better term. What does what groups one, two, and three mean? Is that different salary ranges? And if so, what are they? Far left-hand side of the column.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Mr. Wensler, those are the groups that are specified in statute that determine what ranges each of the commissioners or agency heads is assigned to. And those are indicated above on the left-hand, in the left-hand column for each office.
Thank you.
Ms. Olson.
I fully agree that the commissioners of Transportation and Human Services, and I would add Natural Resources, are undercompensated, drastically undercompensated for the incredible jobs that they have to do. But I guess I would ask that if we're going to consider making some kind of a recommendation on the minute position, we put that at the end of our business, because we have no information whatsoever about that. So if we have time, we can come back to that, you know, at our next meeting.
Okay. Well, what I hope we could do is just have this general discussion now before anybody starts making motions and doing all that. So this is very helpful, and I think that's a good suggestion. Mr. Robbins is nodding his head yes, so I think let's plan on that and keep going here. Mr. Asp.
Well, Mr. Chair, I may be saying something similar here. My perspective on this is that we have a list of recommendations that we made 2 years ago, none of which were adopted. And it seems to me that when you look at the report from 2 years ago, we have a long list of things that are not in our actual statutory requirement under other recommendations. Best I can tell, were ignored. So given the time limitations and our job, I would suggest that we limit our report to just the recommendations under the statutory requirement and not go outside of that. And hopefully if we do that, maybe when the recommendations come out, they can get a little more emphasis and be taken seriously.
Okay, other thoughts? My thought is we should at least start with those things. And if we have time at the end, we can talk about some of that other things more. But I agree we should do our business first that we have to do, and then sort of see where we are.
So can we ask the staff to kind of create a garage where we would put those issues that have been raised but not attended?
Okay. So then let's, if that's okay with everybody, and since it is, let's focus on either the constitutional officers or the judicial officers and see what kind of thoughts we have there.
Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Wensler, when I look at the auditor, the Secretary of State, the Lieutenant Governor, and the Treasurer, from what I'm able to gather from the testimony, their staffs, which, as I understand it from the testimony, which do a significant amount of the work, aren't limited in their salaries or wages, so that they're able to hire and keep and retain quality staff that then advise and then support those constitutional offices. So I'm hesitant as a layperson from southern Minnesota to look at increasing any of the Attorney General, Auditor, Secretary of State, Lieutenant Governor, or Treasurer positions just in that constitutional or executive branch area. Except for leaning towards making a recommendation to increase the governor's salary by a percentage. What that percentage would be, I don't know. And I understand that there may be some debate as to whether or not the individuals in any of the offices are or are not qualified. I'm looking at necessarily the testimony that I've seen is that it seems as though all of those constitutional officers that were here or had representatives are well supported. They have qualified staff. They have good people. They are supported well, and I don't think that the salaries that they have currently detract from anyone running from those positions. The testimony that I've heard, they have full primaries, they have full general elections, and the residents and voters of Minnesota have qualified opportunity to select appropriate candidates. I do believe that since the governor is the chief executive and he's the individual who is the rudder, for lack of a better term, for the constitutional executive side of the office, could be entitled for a recommendation for increase. That's my first introductory thought.
Now, one thing to keep in mind is they're all by statute tied together.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we.
But I can still make the recommendation, just the one.
You can, and we can talk about that. But just so everybody knows, there, I'm going to jump in just with my thoughts about this. I really would like to figure out to increase the Secretary of State's salary in particular. I think it's very low. With all of this stuff about the election results now that is becoming more and more an issue and more complex, and with the issues of hacking from foreign governments in our own elections here, not to mention all the other things, that one just seemed to me to be low. And that in turn then, to do that, we have to get the governor's salary up, which last time we recommended $150,000. Obviously it didn't go anywhere. In terms of the committee deliberations, those who were here last time, remember we had some deliberations. There was a motion made to make a significant increase there, and that did not pass. And there was some talks, well, that's too much of an increase at once, and so on and so forth. And we ultimately settled on this. But I think realistically, we've probably all got our own little niches that we think should go higher, but they're married together by statute that we could make a recommendation on, but we're certainly, I don't know that we even know enough to make a good recommendation about that. I think we're kind of stuck with that, and so we have to balance all of this out and see where we want to go would be kind of my take on it.
Mr. Chair, I think that we have, before we leap to any conclusions about any of these positions, we should really do a little more homework looking at the salary comparisons from other states. We haven't spent any time on that. We haven't talked about, except for the judges, the amounts paid in government service versus the private sector, which is one of the statutory directives that we have. And we just need to do a little bit more background discussion before we make decisions about particular positions.
Well, let's have that discussion. We have time, and we've got to get it done. And I think it's very appropriate to do the homework and look at rankings and or whatever factors council members deem to be appropriate here and relevant to this. And break out the various spreadsheets and let's see. See what we want to talk about. Do you have anything specific you want to start with?
Since we have so much information about the judiciary salaries, which I appreciate, it's helpful to have that. I guess I would recommend that we start there.
Okay, but let's talk a little bit more about the rankings or the other thing is the constitutional officers. Well, it's all kind of right in front of us, and we're all digging out those ranking sheets now.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Asp.
Could I offer one proposal just for the sake of discussion here?
Sure.
Last time we suggested that the governor's salary be increased to $150,000 and all of the other increases would be tied to that, I believe. What if we tried something more modest this year and just suggested that they all be indexed for inflation? Because they're not right now, right?
They are not correct. I think that's right. That would be one possibility.
My thinking on that, again, seeing that nothing happened with our previous recommendations and feeling somewhat frustrated about that, it seems like maybe if we tried some type of other proposal that was more modest, it may get more attention. It wouldn't be a pay increase then. It would just be saying in the future those salaries would be indexed for inflation.
Well, it does seem to me that the climate has changed a little bit, at least in half of the legislature, so that may make a difference, too, in whether our recommendations are considered or not. So I'm not sure I don't think that follows the statutory guidance in terms of looking at public and private sector salaries. Mm. And
I was wondering about that, too. What does the statute say about... Do you know, Mr. Hoop?
What does the statute say about
what we have to consider?
What our recommendation?
The amount of compensation paid in government service and the private sector to persons with similar qualifications, the amount needed to attract and retain experienced and competent persons, and the ability of the state to pay the recommended levels.
Do you have the section that shows how they're tethered together, how the governor is tethered to the other constitutional officers?
No, but that's on this little, it just shows this.
I mean the language, because we were told
no,
that they're tethered, and I was wondering how the tethering works. So,
Well, but this explains it, because it shows the percentages.
I'm looking at
it's
it.
It's just the graph.
Oh, so that's the only connection or connective material. So the governor's salary went up $5. They'd each get that percentage that $5.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
Right.
That's my understanding.
Right. Okay.
Right.
Greg, ignore my previous request.
Mr. Asper's got an interesting idea.
May I ask a follow-up question on that?
Sure, you certainly may.
So what is it about indexing the salaries of the constitutional officers for inflation that would be violative of these factors that we're to consider? And maybe I misunderstood.
Oh, well, to me it doesn't answer the first one at all. How do the salaries that are set compare to private sector salaries?
Sure. Yeah, and
we can't. We've heard enough evidence to suggest that's not at all true.
Right, but I think a lot of that may have to do with how we frame the findings that support our recommendation. I mean, in other words, we may say that there is no analog in the private sector that everyone's tied to or indexed to inflation, but taking into consider all of these factors, we think that this would be a fair way to set compensation in a manner that addresses all three of these factors.
Yeah, I don't see that. I think, for example, if you look at the governor's position, the CEO of a $40 billion a year enterprise, the comparables would be off the charts,
sure.
Right? So I don't think just having an inflationary increase on what is, I think, a very low salary is adequate to address that. And if the legislature had thought that was a good solution last year, they would have, or 2 years ago, they would have adopted that, and they didn't. They didn't make any changes.
I share Mr. Asp's frustration about the recommendations last time around, very much so. But I think that solution assumes that the salaries are okay right now. I'm of the opinion, I think they're, frankly, I'm on the upper end of a lot of these things, which I don't think that we'll end up doing. But I would like to see a significant increase, and then from that day forward, you might go with inflationary or put a COLA on it or something like that. But Mr. Robbins, let's keep going, keep talking.
Chair Berg and Mr. Asp, I'm going to talk a little bit about the history of this council. Before the constitutional change to provide for a legislative salary council, this council also had recommended legislative salaries. The legislature listened fairly seriously at that time for obvious reasons. We are now of lesser status considerably. And frankly, when I applied 2 years ago, I indicated to the Chief Justice that I might be considering recommending sunsetting this council. I still think that's a viable thought. What we need to do as a council is make reasonable recommendations. I supported every recommendation we made last time. They were reasonable recommendations. They were given into a very toxic political environment. So to say you're going to go off to some new direction and think that is why they're going to listen to us, I have to tell you, is mistaken. What we should do is make recommendations that we think are reasonable to both parties and the governor. And as far as inflation factors for constitutional offices, I'd like to know a single state where a legislature would tolerate that. If there is one, mark me flabbergasted. But that is not what the legislature is going to tolerate. It's their job to set the salaries.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Wensler.
I can understand and I can hear from each of the members, and I feel the need to try to find an opportunity to be fair, and I can kind of see the point of view that we've got on the right side of the table, and I understand the point of view on the left side of the table. My unique position is I'm probably the lowest paid person at the table based on my personal knowledge of what I believe that I make versus the knowledge, skills, and abilities of the people I've talked to around the table. And I can understand from a layperson's perspective, although I understand where having that indexation for inflation comes to, it's the opportunity to always be fair. It's to look at making sure there's something coming to the individuals who are serving and putting in the time and the effort. I think that that's valuable. But as a layperson from spending my time in southern Minnesota, I don't necessarily think that that's the best way to go, because the voters need to have the opportunity to be able to, through their decisions in voting for the members of the legislature as to whether or not the salary should go up or down, and then they have that public need and they have that public input. Although it is diluted because it's a large state, there's a lot of voters and there's a lot of different legislators that have different opinions, there is some influence the voter has over those salaries by making that opinion known to their legislator. By indexing it for inflation, we take that responsibility away from the legislature to take that political calculus and to listen to their constituents. And that's where the piece comes in my mind, where I would not want to lean forward or look at indexing for inflation for automatic raises for public officials. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, yeah, this is all, again, helpful discussion to keep this going. And I think one thing we have to keep in mind, I guess Mr. Asp and I are both expressing or have expressed our frustrations about what happened a couple of years ago. That was then and this is now. And there's been an election and there's a bunch of new legislators of both political parties and all in place, and climate in the country has changed and a whole lot of things. So I think we've got kind of an open shot at it again this time around, or at least we should try to do that. And we talked, I think it was you, Mr. Wensler, or somebody, maybe it was Mr. Meyerson, who said maybe we need a champion after we go out of existence on April 1st, and maybe that can kind of help, and we could do a little bit better job there maybe if we just continue to volunteer to help push whatever we come up with a bit. So,
this is Jim Robbins. I'm not saying I don't think we should go away. We should do the very best we can in presenting what we do. My point is, we have to be politically cognizant and really put a recommendation that they will take seriously. So
I think so also, and it would be nice, and this may be impossible, but it would be really nice to have a unanimous recommendation about something. We've got a lot of different backgrounds here and different approaches to things, I think, but if we could hammer out something, it would be a nice thought. Any thoughts for some of you who haven't commented yet? Do you care to make a comment or say anything? So we, Ms. Tegger, yes.
Mr. Chair, I agree. I do think that these positions are definitely underpaid. And from a private sector perspective, too, looking at what we did 2 years ago and nothing happened versus now, I think I wouldn't want to do anything less per se than what we did last time, because I think that would almost speak more if they looked at what we did in previous years. So to me, just for the governor and the positions tied to it, I would feel, you know, comfortable doing very similar to what we did last year. Plus, I do like tying it to inflation. From a private sector standpoint, there's multiple, I mean, you know, government and business, not the same. A lot of similarities, but definitely not the same. And from a private sector standpoint, there's multiple other opportunities to get bonuses and, you know, commissions and different ways to structure things that you just can't ethically do in the public sector. So there's a couple of my thoughts.
That's helpful. Anybody else?
Mr. Chairman, is there any indication from the council that we would not be willing to recommend a decrease? Do I understand that correctly? Or do we want to at least keep that on the table? Because it is public sector. It is something that, although it's possibly based on the behavior I saw around the table, repugnant to the thought, I wanted to at least propose it, that it's at least out there on the table, that we can consider increases, we can consider keeping it the same, and we can also consider the possibility of a recommendation of a decrease. That isn't off the table. It may be something this council is not interested in doing, but I wanted to at least say that out loud so it is at least considered. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Very good. We obviously can consider most anything here, so I think that's in front of us. I think, let me try this a little bit, that we're stuck with the range. I mean, not the range, the percentages. So we do, and it's the governor's salary that will determine the salary of the other three constitutional officers, sticking with that. And I come at it again, I think the $127,000, whatever the governor's salary is now, is just too low. And I think it's almost a travesty what the Secretary of State's salary is here right now, given these. I really take that seriously, the voting issues that are before the whole country, but we're dealing with our state, and they're working very hard to try to keep it there. And I think that that salary should go up. But I don't know. There's more other thoughts about it. There's a couple of you, Ms. Olson. Well,
so, riffing off of David's suggestion, and I know this is not where you were going, David, but we did the same kind of analysis 2 years ago, and I know that there's a little bit different makeup on the council, but we looked pretty carefully at all those roles. One option, from my perspective, would be to take the recommendations from 2 years ago. I would say those should be adopted effective July 1 of this year, since they haven't already been. But then also make recommendations using those numbers with an inflationary increase that would go into effect in 2021.
I think that's very reasonable.
I agree.
I see a few heads nodding yes.
I am very concerned that the Secretary of State is at a lower pay range than the state auditor, and I realize this would be a other recommendation, but I'm sorry again, Mr. Asp, but I do think it's absolutely closely related to our purview, inevitably, that we look at those things, and I just don't understand the Secretary of State being lower than the state auditor.
I mean, yeah, one. I agree with you completely. One marker for those roles, I mean, if we looked at the state auditor, if it really were compared to CPA firms, of course, it's just completely out of range. But even looking at relatively smaller nonprofits, these salaries would be low, and that might be more analogous in some ways. And it sounded like the Secretary of State's office is actually slightly bigger in terms of employees. I don't think number of employees is the most significant factor, but it's something to look at too. I think those percentages are just made up. I don't understand their relevance to anything. They don't make sense to me.
Mr. Hubinger, do you remember when those came into the statutory scheme?
Mr. Chair, members, I believe they were adopted in around 1999 or 2000.
Okay, the reason I ask is I remember when I was back in the legislature, back in the 70s, there was a big fight went on about these salaries, and Arne Carlson was one of the leading players in the fight about it against Don Moe, a Democrat, and there were all of these kind of discussions went back and forth. And I don't even remember who was on what side or how it all came out, but I think somehow that things got tied to the governor's salary then. And it was a way to do this for whatever that may be worth now, which is probably nothing. But it was a big, these kind of discussions have gone on for a long time in the legislature, I know. And it's an effort to try to attract good people to government. And yet the legislature getting very nervous about salaries getting way too high and try to put them down. And the battle goes back and forth over time, I think, over the years. And it obviously hasn't changed for some time here now. And the salaries are, I think, by most criteria, based on number of employees, budget size, whatever, they're low. And we don't rank too high. So, and just kind of keep all that in mind as we go forward, Mr. Asp.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I maybe should want to clarify something, and I'm not suggesting that the salaries aren't low, or that it makes any sense to have the Secretary of State at 75 and the auditor at 85. If anything, it should be the opposite based on what we heard today, where the auditor has less work to do than they've been doing before. My primary objection, my principal objection here is, if you look at what we did last time, there are recommendations about the salary of the head of the Minnesota Zoo, the Minnesota Business Finance Incorporated, the Metropolitan Airports Commission. I'm suggesting that our work should be more limited than that. I'm fine with language saying that it doesn't make sense to tie all these salaries to the governor at their current percentages, and I'm also fine with an increase for the constitutional officers, but as long as it's something that we can defend as reasonable and potentially politically acceptable, although I don't know that we're the best judge of that, at least I'm not. So that's kind of where I'm coming from on this, and I actually don't oppose Ms. Olson's suggestion to have an increase with an inflation attached to it, if it solves the problem of having salaries that are tied forever to a very low number.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman.
That's interesting. Just a minute. I have a, I'm not thinking about this, just so you can get some concrete numbers in front of you. If we made the Secretary of State salary $120,000 a year, which is a pretty healthy increase, obviously, from 95 now to 120. You'd have to give the governor $160,000. You'd give the attorney general $152,000, the auditor $136,000, and the lieutenant governor $104,000, to give some numbers. My view is that I could be talked into going higher, but I suspect there's others who don't want to do that. But that's somehow in that range to me would make some sense to do this and then make some language about the cost of livings or like you were saying doesn't make any sense, but we're stuck with it sort of thing. Mr. Asp and then Ms. Olson.
Would it be possible to just make a recommendation that has numbers as opposed to percentages? I know that's not how the system is structured, but without even saying that they should change the structure, what if we just said, here's the numbers we suggest for each position?
And they wouldn't necessarily match up with the existing percentages.
Yeah, and what do we, and we don't care. See.
We don't care.
If they change the statute, they change the statute.
Right.
Mr. Chair and members, there's no statutory requirement that limits your recommendations to those percentages for the other constitutional officers.
Suppose we should acknowledge that's what we're doing, but
it
seems.
And that it would require a change in the statute.
But again,
and the percent,
for the people that pay attention, it's not a statute, it's a session law, so it's not codified.
I actually agree with Mr. Asp's suggestion of limiting the topics that we address here. I don't know that will garner any more attention, but we can dream. and I also think it makes sense just to offer numbers and offer numbers for each of the constitutional positions, not just for the governor.
That's a pretty interesting idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Wensley.
One of my concerns and my thoughts is as we go through this process, we're conflating the testimony that we've received from the members of the staff of the constitutional officers that are doing what I believe are lion's share of the work. I haven't received any understanding or any feedback as to the constitutional officers themselves in the position doing a lot of the work. They're the head, they're the individual that gives the direction to the department, the auditor, the governor's office, et cetera. So as I look at it, when we were having our early conversation in our last meeting, the council was looking at, do we have any limits on the Deputy Attorney General, the Deputy Secretary of State, and their salaries and their managers? And unequivocally, as I understand it, there is no tether. So they're qualified, high, well-compensated staff that do the lion's share of the work are receiving quality pay, as I understand it. It's the constitutional officers that we're looking at increasing the salary for, but they might not be doing the nitty-gritty, in-the-weeds work that their staff and their staff managers are doing. So I don't want to conflate the testimony where I believe, Mr. Chairman, that we have a very valuable Secretary of State's office. They do valuable work, and it's very important, but it's done by the Deputy Secretary of State, his staff, his managers, et cetera, not necessarily the Secretary of State, the constitutional officer himself. And that weighs heavily on my mind as I look to trying to find a consensus around the table, because I want to honor the request. If we should increase it, we should, but let's not take the testimony from the staff members who do what I think is a large quantity of the work and conflate it with what potentially could be, and I'm making it more than it is, a constitutional officer that may have more vacation time than their deputy chief of staff, et cetera, their deputy attorney general, et cetera. And I might be wrong, which is why I'm throwing that concern out there so that I can receive feedback on that thought process. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Olson.
I think that in my experience over a few decades in state government, having worked with those constitutional officers, I think they not only set the direction and tone, but also the work ethic for their staff, the priorities for their staff. Of course, if you have 350 people under you, such as the Attorney General, you're not doing the lion's share of the work because you have 350 people doing work. But that doesn't lessen the amount of work that the Attorney General is responsible for and responsible for overseeing. And the same is true, I know by experience, with both the state auditor and with the Secretary of State. And I think the type of work and the importance of the work that those offices do are reflected in the responsibilities of the constitutional officer. You know, I understand that we can disagree with if somebody's of a different party, or perhaps there's occasionally some kind of a freeloader in one of those constitutional offices. That has not been my observation. I think the people that take those jobs work damn hard and execute their duties responsibly. Now, do I always agree with whoever's in office? No, of course not. But I don't think that's what this is about.
Mr. Chairman, so. I'm trying to equate what do they do? Because I don't have that knowledge base to be able to make the comparison on the three items that we've been talking about. And that's where I'm coming from. I'm just trying to be able to fill in that bucket of knowledge so I can compare it to 1, 2, and 3.
Okay. Yep. So I can speak best to the Office of the Attorney General, mm-hmm. having worked closely with the Attorney General, that person has an overall responsibility for the office, but also for the legal work of the state. And so they are intimately involved in considering what kind of position to take in particular litigation, whether to initiate litigation. One of the big cases that happened during my tenure at the Attorney General's office was the tobacco litigation. Maybe you didn't agree with how they did it, but that was a very big case for the state of Minnesota, and the Attorney General was, you know, incredibly involved in that, not only in whether, but also how and where. I think that's one example, but the Attorney General is actively involved in overseeing and engaging on the kinds of litigation that the state is doing and what the state isn't doing, you know, trying to evaluate what might we better protect this group or the state of Minnesota.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we, Mr. Robbins.
Just a quick point. Chair Burr, James Robbins. I agree with Ms. Olson. I want to point out that these other functions of the constitutional offices regarding investments and pensions and some other areas are very important, is very important work too, and really does involve hundreds of millions of dollars of management. So you do want to compensate based on that jurisdiction as well. And I will say, Mr. Wensler, there is truth to, there has been a constitutional officer who has slacked off, and they eliminated the office as a result. Because, frankly, treasurer was not a very dynamic or important position. Mm-hmm. I think I really do feel strongly that Secretary of State is a dynamic position. Mm-hmm. This is less true. There isn't a lot of new ways of doing state auditing. So we need to really look at that, and those recommendations would be other recommendations if we adjust those salaries. And I agree with Mr. Asp. Let's just look at the salaries for those offices, and especially now knowing that it's not statutory, those percentages, that it's simply session law. Believe me, we are within our authority to do it.
Mr. Chairman, I'll be very brief. I apologize, and I appreciate
that.
Go ahead. To that, I'd like to go back to my original request to see if we could find the ones that we rank, like the Secretary of State, the Auditor, the Attorney General, and pick out the dollar amounts that we think would be appropriate and make that recommendation so that we can reach that consensus that the Chairman's looking for, and then to allow the others to remain blank or make no recommendations at all if that's possible. But that's what I'm hoping for.
Well, we have a grand total, I guess, of five offices to consider. And I would just echo very strongly what Ms. Olson said. I have had the opportunity, a wonderful opportunity, to work very closely with several governors in our state of both political parties, and to a person, they are extremely hardworking, dedicated people who are motivated for the right kinds of things, and in my judgment, we could pay them significantly more money and they would still be underpaid in terms of their value to the state of Minnesota and what we're doing. And so to talk about somebody does the lion's share of the work in the governor's office, for example, I mean, well, yes, I suppose to a certain extent you just have to. Or, and also in the Secretary of State's office to go down there. But in terms of the wisdom, the hours spent, the other factors that go into defining work, I guess, and who's doing the lion's share, I think the lion at the top comes out on top. There's just, and I can attest to that from personal experience with a lot of governors from different, both political parties. So I think that's something to keep in mind as mm-hmm. you go forward with that, Mr. Wensler. Yes.
Mr. Chair, one other comment, not to piggyback of what Ms. Olson said, Mr. Robbins, and yourself, but another thing I think with these positions, I don't know the nitty-gritty of what they do, but I have worked in city government and county government, and those top positions, the level of responsibility and public scrutiny and oversight and just the way that they have to oversee and carry themselves and be very aware of everything that's going on in their department, it's not even physically possible for them to do all the little nitty-gritty because there's just so much there. I don't know if that helps kind of shed a little light to it, but it's just, I agree with Mr. Berg, it's a very challenging position, even from a family standpoint too and emotionally, and so I think just further supporting that they are underpaid, which we've already also, most of us agreed on, I believe.
Well, I sense a little bit of a consensus forming around, I think it was Mr. Asp's idea about, or who was it, Mr. Robbins, I don't know, putting numbers by these positions and the heck with the percentages. And then we're happy to defend that to the legislature if they ask. We're here to make a recommendation to them. I think frankly, I think it's sometimes it's to give them a little cover and a little other things to do this, but a lot of thoughtful development here in the real world of getting something done so we get a state government that works well. And I think that's a good idea. I'm inclined to, I hadn't thought of it before, but I think, anybody really objected to that? Ms. Dahlquist, you've been quiet over here.
Well I really like that suggestion as numbers, because it, even as I sat here 2 years ago, the percentages really baffled me. It didn't make sense to me at all. So when the numbers came up, that kind of makes sense to me. You know, I just wanted to support that recommendation, because just makes more sense.
Anybody who is would really oppose that?
The only concern I have, Mr. Chairman, Weisler, yep. is that I'm open to having a healthy discussion and making recommendations for increases to salaries. I have a significant problem with indexing it to inflation where it auto increases. I don't think that's in the best interest of voters. I don't think that's in the best interest of being able to have an opportunity to tell your legislator, I don't want the governor to get a raise. I think that's something that we should seriously look at. I can be flexible in my position to try to find a consensus, because I want to honor the chair's request to find consensus. I do not want to in any way, shape, or form index auto increases for constitutional officers to inflation. That's just an opinion, and I just wanted to make that heard.
It's a valid opinion, and let's hold that one aside about that aspect of it for the moment. We'll circle back again. Okay. We'll all have our say about that before we're done. Mr. Gregory.
Just a point of clarification. It was suggested earlier that we were, if I understood correctly, we were contemplating essentially renewing our recommendations from the prior session so that they would become effective to that January 1, 2019 retroactively, or did I misunderstand that? Are we only looking at salaries coming into effect 2021, or are we also contemplating looking at this next 2 years?
Are there any restrictions on
that? Yeah, my suggestion was that we recommend that the recommendations from 2 years ago be put into effect on July 1 of this year, of 2019, and that other recommendations become effective in 2021.
Okay. Yeah. Does that answer your question?
It does.
Okay. Mr. Asp.
That seems to me different than what the statute says we should do.
I mean, right.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know that we can't do that. The statute says that we must recommend it for
the next 2 years.
January of the next odd numbered year.
Right.
So I'm not sure if we've.
So that would be
that's
in January.
That's a 2 year delay.
That's for our current discussion.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a 2 year delay. I think that's the problem. These salaries are just so low that they really should be increased this year and again in 2 years. So I would prefer that we make recommendation for both increases.
If I may, part of the reason that I asked that question is my concern is that if we increase salaries for 2021, we've got essentially a 4 year gap. And it, you know, in terms of political capital, like people who are willing to accept that recommendation, it's going to look more extreme than it really is, mm-hmm. given the fact that our recommendations from 2 years ago were passed over.
Yeah.
And maybe the way to soften that is just to succinctly allude to the fact that we made recommendations that were not accepted and give the legislature the opportunity to go back and do that.
Maybe what we should try to focus on is some dollar amounts for these offices, and then we can try to massage the wording a little bit to try to deal with some of these problems. We can maybe even finesse a little bit of the COLA idea if we want or not want. I don't know. But that's something we can, the wording you can get, you know, you can do a lot with, as the lawyers here know. Mr. Robbins.
Yes. I don't have an answer for this, but obviously we're looking at a different type of number for those lower constitutional offices. So I think it would be hard for us to say we're going to approve exactly what we did 2 years ago, because we've already decided that it's out of whack. So to make, you'd want to somehow smooth that over in our recommendation and not just blank, say, you know, the way we had it was under the percentage situation. We should just say we're abandoning it as soon as possible, I think, if that's our wish.
Well, although I do think I would like to see us make a recommendation for an increase to go into effect in 2019.
Yeah, I'm not disagreeing.
Okay.
I'm saying that we would have to revise
to
feel relative to each other. I, for some reason, feel strongly about State Auditor and Secretary of State being out of whack, and I think we've had some testimony. We'd want to make that adjustment effective this year as well.
Mr. Asp.
If I could maybe just set that question aside for a minute. And I mean, just the proposed numbers. What if we did 150,000 for the governor, 140,000 for the attorney general, 120 for both the auditor and secretary of state, which would be at 80% of the governor?
Well, 120 for
both auditor and secretary of state, and 95 for lieutenant governor, which would be just under 65%. So it's so the AG, I think that's about right, about 95%. The other two are right at 80.
And this is for 19.
I think we should set that question aside. I mean, I'd like to talk about that, think about that more. If we're going to do that, maybe we say it differently. We say we renew our recommendation from before, where we said it should go in effect as 2019. That's what we thought then. That's what we think now.
We aren't going to be able to reach any conclusion today, I think, here, but we started narrow. This has been a very, really healthy discussion, and I applaud people with some creative ideas here. Let's go out and talk about if we can get those numbers a little higher, Mr. Asper.
I'm trying to provide something for discussion, Mr. Chair, and even as we've been talking about it, I'm rethinking. The first thing I introduced was about the inflationary index, and now I'm, after comments, I'm rethinking whether that's a good idea or not. So this is all purpose of discussion.
Sure,
I'm not making a motion.
I'm
throwing this
out. Wonderful discussion, and I think let's keep thinking about this. I think there's a consensus about use numbers and just do that, and forget about the percentages. And we got an issue about the cost of living. We got an issue about when to start it, maybe. We can work through that, I think, in time. And I suppose there's some issue about the numbers, but we're starting to get a range here. I think we all are getting, my sense is, a little bit comfortable with. And so we will spend 3 hours next Monday and try to get this wrapped up and the judicial salaries and actually all the major decisions so that we can get a report written. Would be my goal, and I think that's very doable given where we are right now.
Before we adjourn, Mr.
Yes,
Chair,
Mr. Weiser.
I would like to make a recommendation for judicial salaries, and I just want to start with what I consider to be a starting point for one, which was we've heard a lot about the district court judges, and I'm looking at that being a number of 167. So I'd like the council to consider that as if the district court judge is at 167, we don't have to make recommendations for all the others, or we could. But I'm looking at just the potential impact of what that would do to the other positions.
Can we just leave that on the table?
That's
for
all
now?
I have to do.
Let's just do that, and then we can backfill the percentage numbers there about increases and things.
Yeah.
I think everybody would, you know, because everybody will be doing that anyways, and they get them. So if that's okay with everybody, I think this is a good creative approach. And I thank everybody very much for their good ideas and willingness to talk and compromise and stuff that we've had here.
Mr. Chair, motion to adjourn.
We have a motion to adjourn. All in favor, say aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion carried. We are adjourned.